This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday 22nd of February 2019. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. So we'll begin with the usual regular notices, and the first is to say, if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. And as you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. One more reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. And so, let's look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Ros Lydiard. And so let's move on to the news. The leading headlines this week are: No Brexit funds used for demo, says City Council. Rapist driver preys on female passenger. Rebel councillors' surgery sale plans. And the first headline story is from Claire, please.
No Brexit funds used for demo, says City Council. Winchester Civic Chief Laura Taylor has refuted allegations that the council used government money toward the anti-Brexit march in Winchester. National newspapers have carried the claims that the council raided a pot of £17,000 earmarked to help the council prepare for a no-deal Brexit. The march attracted an estimated 1,000 to 2,000 people and was addressed by Liberal Democrat leader Sir Vince Cable from the steps of the Guildhall on Saturday, February the 9th. Other campaigners were unhappy that the council allowed the use of the steps, which are council property, for political purposes. In a statement, Ms. Taylor, Chief Executive of the City Council, said, "The Guildhall is a public building and its steps have been used as a place of protest and rally for decades by a wide range of political parties and groups. The council decided that to stop access for this rally would be inconsistent with the historical use of the steps as a platform for free speech. This approach was supported by the Conservative administration of the City Council. The Guildhall, Tourist Information Centre and the cafe were open as usual during the rally, and two door supervisors were employed at a cost of £144 to ensure members of the public could visit the Guildhall if they wished. Bus services were maintained through a temporary road closure, and our street care team were on site, as is our usual approach at times when large numbers of people are expected in the city centre. No money from central government was used to fund any expense related to the rally, which totalled around £900. The council believes no rules or standards were broken in allowing the speakers to use the steps, added Ms. Taylor. Government Minister James Brokenshaw is reported to have written to the council seeking clarification. Over the years, the Guildhall steps have been used by the Greens, students demonstrating against tuition fees, and issues such as Save Barton Farm, Bushfield Camp, Winchester Deserves Better, and Silver Hill. It has also seen political speeches by winners at general elections, including Mark Oughton after his victory by 2 votes in May 1997.
The headline is Rapist Driver Preyed on Female Passenger. A taxi driver has been jailed for raping a woman in his cab. Ferham Khan was working as a taxi driver in Winchester on September the 30th, 2017, when he picked up the woman from the Broadway at around 1 a.m. Southampton Crown Court heard how the 33-year-old victim had been enjoying a night out with her friends and, at the end of the evening, called for a taxi to take her home. The 29-year-old driver from Derby Road, Southampton, believed his passenger had fallen asleep, pulled over in an unknown location, and sexually assaulted and orally raped her. The court heard the woman was so scared that she froze. When Khan thought she'd passed out through having too much drink, he called the police and complained that he had an unconscious woman in his car and that he wanted her removed. As soon as police and paramedics turned up, the woman told them of her ordeal. Khan was immediately arrested and his taxi seized for forensic examination. When questioned by officers, Khan claimed it was an accident, saying that the woman had fallen on him while he had his trousers unbuttoned. Later, Khan admitted that was a lie, which he told because he was concerned his wife would find out that he'd had a sexual encounter with another woman. However, Khan went on, claiming the victim had started touching him first and even suggested sex in return for a cheaper fare. During a 7-day trial at Southampton Crown Court, the jury found Khan guilty of by a unanimous verdict. In a statement to the court, the victim said, "On that night, I did as any young woman would. I went out with friends and I took a taxi home. What happened in the taxi destroyed me. That man shattered my world into tiny pieces. The pain and suffering I have endured because of what he did has left me broken. I don't know who I am anymore. This man has stripped me of my identity. At the moment, I'm simply surviving. I take each day as it comes, and I pray that one day I will feel like me again and be able to start living." The judge sentenced the Wessex Cars employee to 12 years imprisonment. Following the sentence, Farooq Khan, no relation, the director of the Winchester-based taxi firm, said Khan had been working for the company for a month when the incident happened. He said the offender had passed the DBS checks and added, "We assisted the police. He was suspended straight away." He added that he did not think the 12-year sentence was sufficient. Farooq Khan also said that there was no camera in the taxi as, according to Winchester City Council's policy, they are not obliged to have one, unlike taxis registered with other councils, such as Southampton. Police staff investigator Joanne Power Daniels praised the victim's bravery. "We are so impressed with her courage. No matter how traumatic this has been for her and continues to be, she has supported this protracted and complex investigation of rape. Without her, we would not have been able to get Khan to face justice for what he did. I hope now this sentence means that she will be able to move forward with her life."
Rebel councillors' surgery sale plans. A rebel city councillor who bought a key piece of land earmarked for regeneration without, quotes, any profit motive, has been trying to sell it to the council for more than £2 million, well above what he paid for it. The figure was revealed in the emails between Liberal Democrat councillor Kim Gottlieb and Winchester City Council, seen by the Hampshire Chronicle. However, councillor Gottlieb says he still stands to lose out financially. He said, "The price tentatively agreed with the council is much lower, and, even if it is concluded, I will still be left with a six-figure shortfall as a result of my Silver Hill campaign. As previously reported, Councillor Gottlieb was instrumental in a legal move which scuppered the original Conservative-led Silver Hill scheme. He formed the Winchester Deserves Better campaign with his Winchester-born wife Nikki in June 2014, and it rapidly gathered momentum among residents. Their concern was that the scale, nature and poor design of the proposal promoted by the council would ruin the historic character of the city and devastate the High Street. Councillor Gottlieb then bought the St Clement's GP surgery in September 2017, when he was serving as a Conservative, for £1.6 million, according to a well-placed source. Speaking in 2017, Councillor Gottlieb said, "I have not done this for any profit motive, and, in due course, the purchase will be completed in the name of a new civic amenity trust." No civic amenity trust has been set up. Councillor Gottlieb said, "I did investigate setting up a trust, but found it very difficult to fund as I had to retain the financial liability myself. I was content to do this as I was always assumed that the property would find its way back to the council." Now, new emails have come to light showing agents acting on behalf of Councillor Gottlieb trying to sell the surgery to the city council for between £2 million and £3 million. The most recent figure seen by the Chronicle being £2.25 million. The new figure referred to by Councillor Gottlieb is not known. The St Clement's site forms a key part of the Central Winchester Regeneration Project, also known as Silver Hill 2, with the City Council hoping to move the doctors to a new base in Upper Brook Street. In an email dated December 3, 2018, James Clay, Director at Property Consultants London Clancy, wrote, "We set the value of our clients' interest in the region of £3 million by virtue of the SPD, that's a supplementary planning document for the CWR project. The site could be redeveloped in isolation to provide a four-storey building of up to 20,000 square feet in size. In addition, its central position makes it pivotal to the broader site." Following an offer of £1.8 million from the City Council last month, to which Mr Clay responded, "I have taken instruction from my client, Tanner Street Limited." In brackets it says, "Councillor Gottlieb is the sole director of Tanner Street Limited, according to the company's house," close brackets. They would consider an offer from Winchester City Council starting with a 2, namely £2.25 million for St Clement's surgery, subject to contract only and on the basis of a speedy transaction. Councillor Gottlieb told the Chronicle, "If and when any transaction is completed, the full details of it will of course need to be disclosed. It is understood the Council tried to buy the site in 2016, but were outbid by Councillor Gottlieb." He added, "I don't know which gutless, anonymous lowlife fed this story to the Chronicle, but I can probably guess. But the figures quoted are all quite wrong. When I bought the surgery in 2017, it had already been put up on the open market because the then owners had given up trying to deal with the council. And Henderson, who partnered with the City Council on the original Silver Hill project and are now known as THRE. I was particularly concerned by the prospect of the Henderson scheme being resuscitated. It seemed very possible because of the 2009 planning permission was being kept artificially alive. Additionally, I wanted to ensure that the practice wasn't evicted before a new surgery was built. If Henderson had been able to proceed with the scheme approved in December 14, the practice would have moved out before the end of 2015. These two issues have now been addressed, and negotiations in respect of the new surgery continue. A third reason is that I wanted to preserve the chance to build a civic-minded development which will bring economic, cultural and social benefits to the whole city. The extraordinary opportunity the site presents would have been stymied had it been acquired by someone outside of the council family. I recently issued an exclusive invitation to the council to acquire the site, and I accepted the single offer put in writing. The offer is significantly below the site's real market value, but I'm happy to accept it because the site is critical to the regeneration of the locality, which I have long supported. As the project progresses, rather than having defend spurious allegations, I very much look forward to contributing to the more important task of ensuring that the city centre's regeneration is successfully achieved. Winchester City Council declined to comment. Cabinet was due to reconsider the land transaction last Wednesday, but details have not been made public.
And we have the death notices for you now. The first notice is for and about Brian Woodruff, who died peacefully on the 11th of February, aged 92. And for you regular readers, it may be of interest to you to hear just a little about Brian. It is with great sadness that we must include Brian in our death notices. Brian was a long-standing member of the Talking Newspapers organisation, having joined some 20 years ago. He was a popular and talented reader on both the Chronicle News and the magazine, where his considerable acting skills and pleasant voice were used to good effect. Brian was also a presenter on the magazine. He was aged 92 when he died, and in his own view, he had a long and entertaining life in theatre. Brian once considered taking a professional path in theatre, but considered the richness of the roles he played on the amateur stage and the friendship of so many like-minded characters far outweighed the benefits. Brian will be missed by us all. And the next announcement, please, Claire.
The next one is Blackmore. Esmond Ebbie Blackmore peacefully passed away on 15th February, aged 87 years.
Broomham. Dorothy Broomham, formerly of Sutton Scotney, on the 2nd of February, aged 96 years.
Duddridge. Constance Mary Ann Connie Duddridge passed away peacefully on the 2nd of February, aged 106.
Gill, Elsie Jean Gill, peacefully on the 5th of February.
Holt, Irene Elizabeth Holt, Rene, died peacefully at Sycamore Cottage, Basingstoke, on 6th of February, aged 90 years.
Maunder, Barbara Pearl Maunder, died on the 10th of February at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 93 years.
Nightingale, Susan Mary, Sue Nightingale, died in Brendon Care on the 11th of February, aged 66 years.
Mary Pattinson Dodds passed away peacefully in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 12th of February, aged 90 years.
Platt, Dr. Hugh Shooter Platt, OBE, TD, peacefully at home with his family on the 4th of February.
Springhall, Iris Ivy May Springhall, passed away on the 9th of February, aged 101.
Whiting, Stanley Edward Whiting, died after a long battle with Alzheimer's on the 7th of February, aged 92.
Young, Harvey Allen, a.k.a. Retro, or Snowy Young, passed away peacefully on the 31st of January, aged 87 years. Thank you all very much for that. And going on now to Christian Comment, which is going to be read to us by Claire, please.
This is written by Liz Tatum, and she's headed it, God Amid the Depths of Bereavement. Writing this by the sea in the far west, the strong winds are blowing the waves alarmingly high, slamming their energy into the rocks, shooting spray high in the air and soaking us if we stand too close. The centre of each wave is all colours of turquoise and green. The white horses, I always see them that way since first seeing the imagery, are racing to shore. A seal is bobbing about and diving into each wave like an experienced human swimmer would, or is it us who copy the animals so perfectly attuned to their environment? Probably. Watching the sea, it brings back memories of a very difficult time when I felt I was constantly being knocked over by giant wave after giant wave, with no time to recover in between. Then, as time went on, there were periods of calm when I would float a while before being knocked over again by an unseen wave coming up behind me. A friend helped me to understand that bereavement I was experiencing was not ever going to be linear, with a beginning and an end, but cyclical, with longer periods of calm as time went on. She too drew the analogy of being at sea. Over the years, that insight has helped me, and as I stand and look at the sea from the safety of the cliff tops now, I can still feel the impact of that enormous force of grief, but feel safer with distance. I know what to expect, and my wounds are not so raw. In the cove where I was standing the other day, there are two different rock formations on either side of the outlet where the stream meets the sea, laid down in times so long ago I can't even begin to imagine. In the storms of 2014, a huge round boulder was blown across from one side of the cove to the other, and now sits incongruously amongst the jagged granite rock. It is a sign of nature's force, and for me, the force of God to move us impossibly. Like so many, and with the psalmists and the prophets, I have rallied against God, asking why he has forsaken me, as did Jesus ask that question in his suffering on the cross. Looking at the deep colours inside the waves as they turn over, I was reminded of the depths where God met me in all my turmoil. I don't claim to understand suffering, why we have to suffer, why there is evil. I think it has something to do with the world we live in, where there is free will and mortality, even for the rocks eventually, I suppose. I do know, though, that even if we're not aware at the time, God sits with us and meets us in the depths of our despair and darkness, as incongruous as the shifted boulder. His strength and healing power can transform us and move us forward if we let him. There is so much I don't know, but I do know that. And that was written by Liz Tatum.
Thank you very much, Claire. And letters to the editors. And my goodness, there's a very mixed bag of letters this week on mostly different subjects. So we've got 12 for you. And Richard will start it off with the first, please.
Yes, and I'm afraid the Brexit word rears its beautiful head.
As ever.
Karen McCleary says, queasy does it. I love to travel, and I'm lucky enough to be able to do it frequently. Whenever I come home, though, I offer up thanks that I come back to a beautiful country with safe and secure systems and a democratic heritage which has influenced the world. I'm also always humbled when I watch television images of people in Africa or Middle Eastern countries who walk for days and queue for hours for the privilege of being able to cast their vote, when, for me, a vote is either postal or a quick trip to a nearby safe polling station. It fills me with a great sense of unease, therefore, when I see politicians, elected representatives from all parties who owe their offices to those who vote for them, deciding it is apparently perfectly acceptable to try to overturn a decision which has been properly and democratically voted for. I refer, of course, to those politicians who are trying to overturn the result of the 2016 referendum and cause the UK to remain in the EU. Calling a second referendum a people's vote fools no one. If a referendum is not a people's vote, then what the heck is it? Who else, I wonder, like me, is feeling a little queasy seeing elected politicians in both local and national, Winchester on Saturday, endorsing the notion that it is acceptable to overturn a democratic decision? The sovereignty of this nation is precious, and its laws and traditions should be respected above all else. In 2005, France voted no to accepting the EU constitution. This vote was subsequently ignored by its own politicians, and the French people have not forgiven or forgotten. Jean-Claude Juncker, now EU Mandarin-in-Chief, said at the time, "Of course there will be transfers of sovereignty, but would I be intelligent to draw the attention of public opinion to this fact?" Do we, the British people, really think it's acceptable to follow the example of the French and overturn a legitimate vote? And should we continue to be part of an organisation led by such a devious and disrespectful bureaucrat? Karen McCleary, Hook Pit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
And I'm afraid mine is also linked to the B word. Another letter entitled Cost of Demo. Sir, many will find it astonishing that Winchester City Council had to spend thousands of pounds to provide a venue for Remainers to stage a Lib Dem demonstration in favour of a people's vote. The council had to foot the bill for all the security employed to ensure the safety of the large numbers attending the demonstration. But why they didn't insist on the Lib Dems making arrangements for security and paying for the cost for their event, instead of Winchester citizens being charged with the cost, is anybody's guess. Particularly so, as one of the main speakers addressing Winchester's educated elite was none other than former Labour Education Minister Lord Adonis, whose only contribution in government was to launch a booklet outlining how children as young as five should have a say in how their teacher conducts lessons and outlines how they should set up pupil councils to make their schools a nicer place to be. His fellow speaker, Sir Vince Cable, has achieved nothing of any substance in his long political career other than having a reputation as a, quote, chief moaner, unquote. Those attending the demonstration were obviously in good company. This from Peter Hargreaves, Worthy Lane.
This letter is headed Embarrassment. Sir, Councillor Griffith's letter in last week's Hampshire Chronicle, February 14th, was an embarrassment to the City Council. She is the chairman of a major projects committee, and her attack on committee members, other councillors and the Chronicle was unseemly. Worse still was her attack on a member of the public who had attended a recent overview and scrutiny committee to tell how Bar End will fail to accommodate netball, a sport which is rapidly growing and in which England excels. If it is correct that the council has had 70 conversations with netball clubs, then that's 70 occasions when the council hasn't listened. Councillor Griffiths repeats the myth that the new centre will not cost the taxpayer a penny. We are bound by council confidentiality rules not to disclose financial details about the centre, but a figure of £38 million is already in the public domain. It doesn't take much imagination to reckon how usual increases in government-led projects, plus interest and so on, could increase this amount considerably. Bar End was meant to be a project that would excite and delight and bring us all together. Unfortunately, under Councillor Griffith's stewardship, the project became contentious and politically skewed. The result is a design that is expensive and short of facilities. Eastleigh's new 15-court sports hall is regularly full, so why are we building an 8-court hall, which is no bigger than the hall Winchester has had for the last 40 years? Where is the backing for the many other growing sports, such as basketball, indoor hockey, gymnastics and athletics, who also won't find a home at Bar End? All the key decisions were made in closed, unrecorded meetings by just three Conservative councillors, with the rest of their group whipped into line and to inane expressions of confidence. It is no way to run a project as expensive and as important to Winchester, city and district as this. The Liberal Democrats have strongly supported building a new sports centre from the outset, and still do. But we struggle to cheer on a disappointing proposal which will inevitably cost the taxpayer rather more than a penny. And this is from Councillor Brian Lamming, Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward, Councillor Jane Rutter, the Worthies, Councillor Malcolm Prince, the Worthies, Councillor Jackie Porter, the Worthies, Councillor Dominic Hiscock, St Bartholomew, Councillor Margaret Power, Alsford and Itchen Valley, and Councillor Kim Gottlieb, Alsford and Itchen Valley.
And the Brexiters are out in force this morning. This is from Karen Barrett, who identifies, she thinks, the seeds of Brexit. It's ironic that your front page photo of Sir Vince Cable addressing the anti-Brexit march, Chronicle February the 14th, appeared above the reports on Hampshire County Council's cuts in support of children with educational needs and disabilities. It was the Lib Dem leader and his coalition colleagues who enabled the Conservatives to push through the austerity policies which have seen cuts in public services across the board. While it's the Lib Dem support for the raising of tuition fees, which is usually highlighted as an example of their reneging on pre-election promises, they also voted for the disastrous Health and Social Care Bill, enacted in 2012, which has seen private companies make billions out of NHS contracts and allowed them to sue health trusts if bids are unsuccessful. Sir Vince supported deregulation and measures to reduce red tape for employers relating to health and safety. He also saw no risk in the TTIP, Trade and Investment Partnership, against which thousands of people across Europe campaigned and which certainly contributed towards a perception of the EU as a neoliberal project which prioritised the needs of large transatlantic corporations over food safety, the environment and workers' rights. Your report quotes Sir Vince as saying, "We've got a souring of the public mood." Why the present tense? For those of us involved in campaigns to fight cuts to public services and to support those bearing the brunt of austerity, I can tell Sir Vince that the public mood soured a long time before the referendum. If people across the UK had jobs with decent pay and conditions, if they were confident that vulnerable members of their family, young or old, could rely on properly funded public services, they would have been far less likely to vote for change. It may suit the Lib Dems to portray themselves as the party that will save the country from Brexit, but they should acknowledge their part in creating the conditions which allowed it to happen in the first place. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
This letter is headed EU Hostility. The Hampshire Chronicle's front page story about Remainers in Winchester last week, February 14th, could lead the unwary reader astray. In 2016, nearly 55% of Hampshire voted to leave the European Union. These figures were reflected nationwide, leaving Remainers with a golden opportunity. During withdrawal negotiations, the EU abused the United Kingdom by insisting on an agreement that is an outrage to fairness. It is such an unfair deal that Parliament rejected it by an overwhelming vote. Subsequently, Winchester MP Steve Brine was prompted to say he supported a compromise offered by North West Hampshire MP Kit Malthouse. The Malthouse Compromise, backed by Remainers like Steve and Leavers like Jacobs Rees-Mogg, MP, puts fairness back into a UK-EU withdrawal agreement. The EU has shown Britain hostility and contempt by practising in the negotiations and elsewhere in Europe the kind of coercive control that empires exert over subject peoples. Remainers have the golden opportunity of deciding whether to stand with Empire or with an independent people who want to govern themselves. It is wonderful that the people they can choose to stand with are their own. Catherine Abbott, Kingsmere Meadow, Shawford.
Just a short letter here, entitled Essential Role of the Local Press. Congratulations and thanks for your forthright defence of the role of yourself and colleagues in our society. Hampshire Chronicle Leader, February 14th. You are absolutely right to stress that public scrutiny of such projects is essential, and the Chronicle is a vital source of information in this process. I can appreciate how difficult it can be to present a balanced view between the strongly expressed views on these topics, and I often admire your ability to do so. Your newspaper is one of the finest things about this city, and long may you be able to continue your work. I sincerely wish that your new owners will find a business model which allows you and your team to continue to provide this service in the future. This from Glyn Llewellyn, Marnhill Rise.
Sandra Bauhey feels that the sports centre is not enough. I'm an ardent sports fan, an enthusiastic spectator of all sports, indoors and outdoors, and a passionate and active participant in netball. I am mostly ambivalent about politics, but I vote with my feet for a more sporting Hampshire every time I put my trainers on to go and coach, umpire or play. Whether it be gymnastics, badminton, basketball, hockey or netball, clubs all over the Winchester area are desperately short of access to indoor facilities. I know this because each year we have the same battles and squabbles amongst ourselves as we attempt to secure access to facilities to suit our clubs and our respective members and our desire to grow. The chronic shortage of facilities means sports clubs are obliged to restrict their membership and their activities. At a time when we are grasping at any opportunity to get ourselves and our indolent teenagers off their screens and active again, this is incredibly frustrating. It's a travesty and a wasted opportunity that the politicians of this city have determined that the beautiful use of facility to replace River Park Leisure Centre will offer no more indoor courts than are currently on offer. This gorgeous, no-expense-spared venue is supposedly fit for the future. It's hardly fit for today. The sports clubs in the area have, however, been promised by Winchester City Council that we will be granted priority access to regular court bookings at the new facility. We will cling to this promise and hope that our local politicians will honour it. Sandra Bauhey, Moor Court, Spushult.
And this one entitled NHS Crisis. We are quite used to the current plans for the privatising of the NHS by stealth. In a speech by Lord Prior last Friday, he implied that NHS staff no longer go to the extra mile for their patients. Lord Prior, a Tory peer, is a former chair of the now Care Quality Commission and now chairs NHS England. That the NHS has difficulties cannot be disputed. It is currently over 108,000 short of permanent staff at every grade level. This is the consequence of draconian cuts, underfunding and private sector acquisition of lucrative NHS contracts. The introduction of high-profile business personalities to run the NHS is yet another example of the intention to reduce and eventually eliminate public sector involvement and democratic control. The planned NHS 10-year reform programme gives an ideal opportunity to unpick and dispose of the disastrous reforms of the 2012 Health and Social Care Act, the Tories' first attempt to destroy the NHS. It promises an end to the fragmentation of the service, pointless competition and excessive or inappropriate targets. These have conspired to make integrated care focused solely on clinical need far harder to deliver. Despite the forces of big business eyeing up the rich pickings to be made from selling public health, everyone in the NHS is working closely with NHS England and NHS Improvement to make the planned aspirations a publicly owned reality. The high-quality work NHS force, from the very low-paid to the very highly-paid staff, are working absolutely flat-out, day in and day out, to do everything they can for their patients. They are absolutely inspirational in their dedication and loyalty, always giving extra. The environment they work in may be dysfunctional, totally due to the situation created by this government, an under-resourced and overstretched NHS. Irresponsible and unhelpful comments attempting to besmirch NHS staff from Lord Prior will not dent their commitment. The NHS must change for the benefit of the staff and patients. NHS people who work in the system are those who know best about how to deliver such change. This is from Peter Rees, Winchester Labour Party.
And now we have a complete change of subject. Vegetable growing. Daphne Smith's concern about the cessation of people growing vegetables in their back gardens does not apply at this house. At the moment, we can still pick Brussels sprouts, Savoy cabbage, cauliflower, purple sprouting broccoli, which we cage to keep off pigeons, plus leeks, rocket, and cut-and-come-again winter salads, spring onions, and can dig parsnips, carrots, and celeriac, as well as cut herbs like sage, thyme, rosemary, bay, and parsley. Dry stored vegetables include onions, garlic and shallots, bulotti, yin yang and French beans, plus dried apple, chilies and pickled shallots. These can be supplemented from a freezer containing broad, runner and French beans, sweet corn, spinach, cauliflower, raspberries, gooseberries, blackberries and frozen Bramley apple, as well as tomato soup, parsnip soup, and the latest celeriac and mixed vegetable soup. In addition, in the fridge, we have bottled sauerkraut, fermented cabbage. We still have several pots of homemade jam. Although annually digging in several trailer loads of farmyard manure and ProGrow bought in bulk, composted garden waste, ex the recycling centre, and our own compost, this is not an organic garden. We do not keep hens or rabbits. I'm always hugely amused by the sign on the back of one of the supermarket delivery vans, proclaiming, "As fresh as you can pick yourself, or your money back," when a lot of it, of what they currently sell, comes from southern Spain. At 87 years of age, probably the hardest jobs are seed sowing and planting out seedlings. Because we need some help with the heavy jobs, we do not save money, but we do eat very well indeed. Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
Well, congratulations, Mr. Webb. That's wonderful.
And finally, I think a bit of a bitch. Poor service. I have oscillated between being amused and narked by the languid, didactic disdain displayed by some of the Ivy staff when I've routinely visited the Winchester Eatery. When I had the temerity to fancy a poached egg there the other day, you might have inferred from the flouncing that I was either trying to blag my way into Balmoral to goose up a senior royal or had pitched up uninvited to Spectre's Christmas karaoke knees up. If such snottiness is designed to emphasise the exclusivity of the Ivy's brand, I would humbly suggest that this might just be ridiculous pretension. This is the shopping precinct of a small provincial city, for heaven's sake, where the ability to snap up a T-shirt for 50p is but metres away. While the Ivy's sister restaurants might be dripping with celebrities, Winchester has Guy Kramer and, if memory serves, a retired cricketer squirreled away somewhere near Romsey. Don't like James Martin, he may have moved now. It's entirely possible to eat delicious food in and around the city without a garnish of snarky condescension. The Wickham Arms has been managing it for decades. Well, apart from all that awkwardness when Giles Corran weekended there in 29. Why brace yourself for a frigid Ivy experience when you can have better grub with a warm, sincere smile elsewhere? Time to stick to the Chesil Rectory and Chil Bolton's Abbot's Mitre, where, incidentally, the squid is to die for. Yours hungrily, Ali Kefford, Littleton.
Well done.
Great. I think that's appalling. I don't...
Very well read.
Thank you, Richard. And you are continuing because you have the Chronicle's roving reporter. And he asks for news from the public on school pupils striking in protest after inaction on climate change. Over to you, please.
Yes. Well, Melissa Harvey, 46, preschool worker of Springvale Road, Kingsworthy, said, "I think it's fantastic. The whole movement started in Sweden and I'm inspired by it. With the kids out of school, it seems the message will hit harder." Steve Swanson, 49, university lecturer at Kingsworthy, said, "Well, it's certainly an interesting issue. A lot of people think it's inappropriate to take kids out of school, but there's a point to prove, so why not?" Oliver Brady, 24, solicitor at Winchester, said, "Well, it's obviously a worthy cause. It's important that the youth are heard too, especially as this affects the planet they will grow up on." And Jacob Davis, 22, a small business owner of Park Avenue, Winchester, said, "It's quite naive. Of course they're only young. But surrounding the concept, there is technology growing every day that will eventually help the situation."
Thank you very much. Do you have any thoughts of your own on that, Richard?
Yeah, I thought it was terrific, actually.
Yeah, it is. What initiative.
The young woman from Sweden actually told the UN the other day that their emission targets were far too low and that she couldn't wait to grow up and try and do something about it. it's their world and we're not doing very well, are we?
No, but what a clever recognition of a problem. Right. Now, if you have an opinion or subject that you'd like to air in Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23, 8AL. Or you might even like to drop in when you're in Winchester. Right, editorial comment now. And the editor picks up on the story about the positioning or the existence of the Jane Austen statue. "The right decision on Jane Austen," he says. "We welcome the news that Winchester Cathedral has this week dropped its proposal for a statue of Jane Austen in the Cathedral Close. The Dean and Chapter had hoped to raise £250,000 for a piece that celebrated the author who died in nearby College Street in 1817. The statue was to be by sculptor Martin Jenkins, well known for his highly regarded figure of poets, John Betjeman at St Pancras Railway Station in London and Philip Lark in Hull. The city and county councils had both pledged £25,000 each of public money. A very low-key fundraising appeal was launched last December, but it sparked a furious reaction from local people and the issue has filled by the Chronicle's letters pages for nearly 2 months. Critics pointed out that her local links were tenuous. She only lived in the city for a few weeks before her death. One letter summed up the statue as a rampant, busty, kitsch effigy. Goodness. But if this newspaper was trenchant in its criticism of the scheme, we do now congratulate the Dean and Chapter for bowing to the public and reassessing the project. One obviously has sympathy for Mr. Jennings, who will have expended a lot of time and effort on the figure. It is a shame that his brief appears to have been such that his creation was so unsuited to the close. Westminster Diary next, and I wonder what Steve Brine has to say. Thanks, Peter, that's you.
Earlier this month, social media for MPs hit a new low when a Facebook comment from a constituent suggested we should all, quotes, be hung, and I should spend the rest of my days in a 6x4 cell. Charming. Reflecting on this, I am reminded of the wise words of Justin Welby, who said recently, we should find a way in these difficult days for people to disagree well. But for me, it's more than that. And unlike the Archbishop or the Queen, who said similar in her unifying Christmas message, I don't need to make coded references to the fact I am talking about Brexit. Truth is, the vast majority of MPs are working in Parliament in the national interest to secure a deal that respects the referendum result, gives safe passage out of the EU, and allows our country to move on. I believe that is overwhelmingly what the British public want from us at this time of great national anxiety. Of course, I understand some of the smaller fringe parties want, at this critical time for our country, to take themselves out of the debate altogether and grandstand in a way that belongs in the 2016 referendum campaign. Whilst that is their decision, one that surely inflames tensions, stokes division, and raises the temperature even further, it isn't mine. Parliament started this. It needs to step up and finish it. But we should be clear, if it cannot do so this month, all bets are off and everything remains on the table. At the 2017 general election, I promised I would always strike a measured tone that respects both sides as Brexit is delivered, focusing on unity over division, and further to that, constituents can still read my detailed and comprehensive thoughts on the draft withdrawal agreement at www.stevebrine.com/Brexit. I make no apologies, it is lengthy. This is complex and doesn't fit on a banner or into an organised chant from a visiting comedian. I have not changed my view that this deal, or a version close to it, is the only way forward, given there is no majority in Parliament I can see for no deal, no Brexit, or, and I note even its most ardent proponents won't even table an amendment to test the will of the House last month, a second referendum. Last month, Parliament made clear for the first time that there is a majority for a route to safely leaving the EU, with a deal via changes to the backstop, combined with measures to address concerns over Parliament's role in the negotiation of the future relationship and commitments on workers' rights, as well as environmental protections. The PM is now taking this mandate forward and seeking to obtain legally binding changes to the withdrawal agreement while guaranteeing no return to a hard Irish border. I supported the PM last time, and change or no change to the backstop, which we should remember that is there for a reason, I will support her again. Not because I'm a minister, but because I believe it is the right thing. As for no deal, Parliament, like me, does not want to leave without a withdrawal agreement and future framework. However, simply opposing no deal is not enough to stop it. The only way to rule out no deal, given the parliamentary arithmetic, is by MPs approving a deal. Some of us are trying.
We are moving on to Belgarum now, and Richard has the first, headed?
Blunder announcement claims Duke dead. Hampshire County Council has apologised after wrongly announcing that Prince Philip had died. A notice about the Duke of Edinburgh's death was published on the County Council's website after an internal error. It appeared on the front page for a few minutes and was quickly removed. The message said, On behalf of our residents, the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire and Hampshire County Council, we offer the deepest sympathies to the royal family on the passing of Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh. At Hampshire County Council's headquarters, buildings in Winchester, flags have been lowered to half-mast. The authority apologised for the embarrassing blunder and said it was investigating this highly unusual occurrence. Prince Philip is 4 months short of his 98th birthday. The county's blunder is not the first of this kind. In 2017, the Daily Telegraph published an online article stating the same.
And now Peter has one. It's with a new addition to sculpture quickly moved. Please explain.
I will, Ros. What is considered art these days is often up for debate. But Belgarum is sure few would doubt the latest addition to a Winchester sculpture can be called anything other than vandalism. Strolling past the Hampshire Chronicle office on Monday morning, Belgarum noticed that a traffic barrier had been added to the intersection in St George's Street almost a year to the day since it was installed by Winchester City Council. It is not known how the six-foot-long, blue, plastic traffic barrier got there, but it was removed as quickly as it had appeared.
Thank you very much indeed. And we're moving on now to historical items, and I have the first one for 200 years ago. It's Monday, February the 22nd, 1819, and this is reported. The aggregate average of wheat is 77 shillings and 7 pence. The ports, in consequence, will be closed on Monday next against the importation of foreign wheat and will continue shut until the 22nd of May. All other descriptions of grain are allowed free entry.
And 100 years ago, Saturday, February 22nd, 1919. Those who so kindly interested themselves in organising the welcome to cut prisoners at Winchester on Thursday are to be congratulated on the successful result of their effort. It really was associated with the fund that was inaugurated on behalf of the 1st and 4th Battalion in April 1915, and of which Mrs. Bowker, the widow of the gallant 1st Commanding Officer of the battalion, is chairman. This fact should be emphasised, because some people have wondered why only the cut prisoners were included. The second one. On Saturday week, at a reception given by the Ladies' Committee for Entertaining British and American Officers, the opportunity was taken by the mayoress, in the unavoidable absence of the Countess of Northbrook, of making some recognition to the Rifle Depot Band for the splendid music they had provided at the receptions held at the Guildhall from time to time.
And 50 years ago, Saturday, February the 22nd, 1969. The Winchester Employment Exchange, which for the past 20 years has occupied the former Corner House Hotel at the corner of City Road and Swan Lane, moved this week into new purpose-built premises a few doors away at 8 City Road. The first Labour Exchange opened in Winchester in Southgate Street just after the First World War and moved to City Road in 1948. The new premises represent the first attempt to provide a building especially designed for the needs of the service, and Mr. H.G. Locke, the manager, is sure they'll now be able to give an even better service to the citizens of Winchester. Over the years, the function of the Employment Exchange has changed. Even the title has changed. It's now the Department of Employment and Productivity. And a second item. Although Winchester City Council has contemplated closing the Bowling Green in North Walls Recreation Ground, the Libraries, Museum and Lands Committee are to ask that the green should remain open. This was decided at a meeting of the committee in the Guildhall on Monday. Presenting the report of the city engineer, Mr. C.C. Salmon, deputy city engineer, said that it cost £220 a year to maintain the Bowling Green. It was at present being used by only one club, and only 25 matches would be played in the course of the next season. Revenue from the Green will only be £45, and in those circumstances, they decided that they should recommend closure. Mr. M.C. Mould, Management Services Officer, thought that the Green should be closed. The maintenance required was unrealistic when the number of times it was used was considered. There was certainly a decrease in the demand for this facility, and even the groundsmen thought that they were wasting their time in allowing the Green to remain open.
25 years ago, Friday, February the 25th, 1994. Health Secretary Virginia Bottomley defended the steep increase in prescription charges when she was in Winchester on Friday. Interviewed by the Chronicle before the annual luncheon of Winchester Conservative Ladies, she also strongly defended her department's approach to combating smoking. In Britain, she said, only one prescription in five carried a charge, compared to two in five under Labour. The rise would be a contribution by those who could afford it. No child, pregnant woman or pensioner paid. The extra money would go back to healthcare. Far fewer people paid here than any other health service in the world, she declared. What about those people who had to have, say, three prescriptions and chose not to get one because they could not afford it? It's important, the pharmacist points out to the public, the availability of the season ticket for anyone who has a high user, she replied. And she acknowledged, we must tighten care in the community for the mentally ill, and we need access to multidisciplined services of the sort offered by Desborough House in Eastleigh. Mrs. Bottomley went on, I am delighted to be back in Winchester, where the Royal Hampshire County Hospital is to become an NHS trust. I am impressed by the quality of work undertaken and the determined attempt to reduce waiting lists. And then this second section. Student claims about a desperate shortage of accommodation in Winchester have this week been dismissed by King Alfred College staff, who say that no student should be homeless. In a letter to the Chronicle, a group of worried KAC students maintain that crisis point has been reached, that some even camped out in the snow to secure a place in halls of residence, and that others were sleeping on friends' floors. But Assistant Principal Tommy Geddes said there was an adequate number of places, either in halls or the private sector, and that the college was doing its utmost to secure more and more cheaper accommodation. The student's letter stated, the very fact that students camped out in sleeping bags from 11:30 at night until 8:30 the next morning in sub-zero temperatures outside reception to obtain a number... I beg your pardon, until 8:30 the next morning in sub-zero temperatures outside reception to obtain a numbered form for a place in halls of residence only goes to prove the sense of desperation. But Mr. Geddes countered, one very well-equipped student did so and another seven joined him around 4 a.m. Competition for hall places is indeed fierce, reflecting the good value for money that they offer students. The students said they wanted to expose the escalating problem of finding affordable accommodation in Winchester.
Well, thank you all for those. And we're going to look at what's on now in the region over the next couple of weeks. And I'm going to start with talks. And this one is functional recovery after prostate cancer treatment. Now, it may apply to a lot of people, or many of us don't even know about it, but this is from the Hampshire branch of PCASQ, Prostate Cancer Support Organisation. It's at Otterbourne Village Hall, Cranbourne Drive, Otterbourne, SO212ET, at 7:30 p.m. And this is a talk by Roland Rees, consultant urologist, Southampton University Hospital. There will be an opportunity to ask questions, and admission is free and all are welcome. Light refreshments will be provided and a raffle held to defray expenses and a raffle held to defray expenses. If you're interested in this, you can contact Jeff Bailey on 01962 713 579. Now, the next thing that we're going to tell you about is at workshops, and it's a Winchester Discovery Centre. And this piece is just describe for you how versatile the Discovery Centre has become. For regular activities, including reading groups, singing groups, life drawing, language classes, sewing, crafts, baby rhyme line and story time, construction and inspiring science, mini professors, classes for pre-school children, etc. And see the Discovery Centre leaflet or go to www.hants.gov.uk/WDC. And as far as these announcements in the press are concerned, we just have two others for you. One is about the Pontypridd Male Boys Choir, which Claire is going to read for you now. Please.
The Pontypridd Male Choir will be coming to the area once again to celebrate St David's Day in aid of the Mayor's charities. Also appearing will be the Hampshire Youth String Quartet, a group of talented musicians. The concert will be in St Barnabas Church, Swanmore, at 7 p.m. on March the 2nd. Tickets at £15 to include the interval drink are available from Tony King on 01489 892 581 or TonyKing@Swanmore.net, all small letters, or from Jan White on 01489 894 266, or Jan M. White, all small, 39@gmail.com. The final concert this mayoral year will be in the Great Hall, Winchester, where members of various Hampshire Music Service groups will be displaying their talents on Friday, March the 29th. Further details from Anne Pearson, that's Anne Pearson 1, at msn.com, or the Hampshire Music Service on 02380 652 037.
Thank you very much, Claire. And the last thing is on a very cheery note indeed, and it's all about bubbles, and that will finish our What's On section. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Ros. And for those of you who love your glass of fizz, the UK's first and biggest Prosecco festival returns to Winchester after huge success, and organisers can't wait. Coming back with a selection of gins too, this ultimate event for Prosecco lovers will take place at more than 30 locations UK-wide. It will give attendees a chance to sample more than 30 types of Prosecco, Cava, Pink Fizz and Prosecco cocktails. Organisers said, Winchester is really well known for loving its fizz, and after huge demand, it was a must to come back in 2019. And for those non-fizz fans, there will be an Italian Peroni area too. A Prosecco festival wouldn't be complete without a stunning array of Italian street food, designed to complement the array of fizz. There will also be a stage with a dance floor filling live band through all the sessions. On arrival, guests will be given a flute ready to fill. The festival will be at Winchester Guildhall on April 26th and 27th.
That sounds absolutely wonderful.
It does.
Hard to resist in these days of cold, hard winter. Thank you very much, everyone, for putting that on. And we'll go on now to the next item. Before the general news, here are the lighting up times starting on Saturday, the 22nd of February. The sun will set at 5:35 p.m. And on Wednesday, 27th of February, the sun will rise at 6:55 a.m. and will set at 5:42 p.m. Those lighter evenings are getting closer and closer. And on to items of general news. Claire, can we have your first article, please?
Hospital workers hailed at awards. Hospital chiefs have celebrated the dedication of staff with the return of an annual awards ceremony. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust hosted the sixth annual WOW Awards Gala Ceremony to honour the team members from the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, the Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, and the Andover War Memorial Hospital. The special guest for the evening was Holby City actor Guy Henry, while the event was attended by the mayors of Basingstoke and Dean, Test Valley, Winchester, as well as representatives from the Rotary Clubs of Andover, Basingstoke and Winchester. Vicky Houghton, a community children's nurse based at the RHCH, picked up the Chief Nurses Award after being nominated by the parents of a child with complex medical needs, who she has been working with for the last 15 years. The nomination read, "Vicky has been our rock as we have journeyed through our son's childhood. Without her, that journey would have been so much more difficult. She epitomises all that is best about the NHS, never failing to go well above and beyond what is required. She is exceptional." Vicky said, "This family mean a lot to me because I have been working with them for such a long time. It was a privilege to work with this boy as he grew up and turned into a lovely young man. What the nomination said about me is amazing, and it sums up what I try to do for all of the children I work with, so I'm really proud. Also, the team of doctors, nurses and therapists working on Clifton Ward at the hospital picked up the Medical Services Award for their treatment not only of a 92-year-old patient coming to the end of his life, but also his family. Carol Carl, a senior sister on Clifton Ward, said, "I'm very proud of the whole team. Everyone was mentioned in the nomination, which was really nice and shows that we have a great team. We're committed to making sure that we offer the same high standard of care for all of our patients and their families. Over the course of 2018, the Trust received 3,514 WOW nominations." Steve Erskine, chairman of the Trust, said, "It's a privilege to be here working in the same organisation as all of you. You are all magnificent, fantastic, brilliant."
Lovely.
Anger over county's savings as tax rises. Political opposition members were divided over Hampshire's new budget, as it was revealed that the authority has the largest amount of reserves in the country, despite more cuts being pushed through. But frontbench Conservatives argued that most of those reserves, totalling £645 million, according to Liberal Democrat leader Keith House, were already earmarked for future projects such as the Botley Bypass. They added that the unearmarked cash was needed to be dipped into when needed. Lib Dem members argued that some of these cuts, including £13.5 million from adult health and care, as well as nearly £10 million from the Economy, Transport and Environment Department, are being made too soon, and these reserves could be used to keep them going. However, former Lib Dem and now Tory councillor Adam Carew argued that if we spend the reserves, they're gone and gone forever. Nevertheless, the Lib Dem member Malcolm White said, "We're not delivering the services that people of Hampshire have been used to, and that is wrong. Councillors are here to improve the quality of life to the people we represent." The budget was passed with 51 votes against 18, which will increase the council tax by 2.99%, generating £18 million. It's the second lowest precept in the country, despite the authority covering the third largest area. Councillors say this will help its bid to save another £80 million by 2021. From April the 5th, taxpayers living in Band D homes will pay £1,236.87 during the 2019-20 financial year, up from £1,200 in 2018-19. "I've dubbed this the Valentine's Day Massacre budget," said Councillor House. "It's unfair, wrong and disadvantages vulnerable people. It cannot go on like this." Last year, the council increased its tax by 5.99% after central government allowed councils, which funded social care, to ask residents for more of a contribution.
And this one regards a local eatery entitled "Sale Secures Chain's Future." Cake chain Patisserie Valerie, which has a branch in Winchester city centre, has been bought out of administration by an Irish private equity firm, safeguarding nearly 2,000 jobs. Dublin-based Causeway Capital Partners has purchased 96 Patisserie Valerie sites. However, the deal does not include 27 outlets belonging to sister brands Philpotts and Baker & Spice. They are thought to be being sold separately to a different buyer. Patisserie Valerie was put up for sale last month after collapsing following the discovery of fraud in its accounts. Sports Direct tycoon Mike Ashley subsequently submitted a bid for the chain, but later withdrew it, complaining that he had been locked out of the process by KPMG, the administrators. Causeway Capital's Matt Scaife said, "Patisserie Valerie is heritage brand, much loved by its loyal customers. This investment should mark the end of a turbulent period for customers and suppliers alike." The cake firm's parent company, Patisserie Holdings, has been grappling with the fallout of the fraud since October. Last month, the firm said that the extent of fraud meant that it was unable to renew its bank loans with HSBC and Barclays, and that it did not have sufficient funding to continue trading, leaving it no option but to appoint KPMG as administrator. KPMG has already closed 70 stores, resulting in 920 redundancies. Patisserie Valerie Chief Executive Steve Francis said, "We are delighted to welcome Causeway Capital as our partners, ending a disruptive period of uncertainty for the business. The affection and loyalty for the brand among our customers and employees, and Causeway Capital's enthusiasm and support for the business, creates for us the foundations for an exciting future."
Hospice Charity Gaming. A gaming event to raise money for a children's hospice is set to be launched. Naomi House and Jack's Place, hospices for children and young adults at Sutton Scotney, have announced their very first virtual event, Game On. The event involves participants playing any game of their choice for as long as possible to raise money for the hospices via sponsorship fundraising. From March the 1st until March the 3rd, gamers are invited to battle it out online to online or around the dining table to raise money for life-limited and life-threatened children and young adults. It costs £5 to take part, and online gamers can also complete a 24-hour gaming marathon online with friends using the live streaming service Twitch to ask for donations via GivePenny, an online donation platform. Connor Phillips, events fundraising assistant at the hospices, said, "Gaming is for anyone and everyone, and is extremely popular with people of all ages."
Garden Shed Row. Residents in St Cross have opposed plans for a summer house in a back garden. Jane Kennelly has planning permission for a wooden summer house at the bottom of her garden in St Cross Road. Miss Kennelly has since bought a parcel of land from a neighbouring Landor house and proposes to install the structure there. But that sparked objections from neighbours who say it will be overbearing and lead to a loss of privacy. There are also concerns it could be converted into a future dwelling. One neighbour, James Bone of Back Street, told the planning committee, "We consider the size of the summer house is overbearing. The plot's been cleared of plants," said Mr Bone. "It's gone from shaded woodland to now being overlooked by five townhouses. We've gone from a secluded garden to this disaster." Councillor Therese Evans said, "This is a very strange application. We had a summer house at the bottom of a garden. Then the applicant buys another plot and moves the summer house there. But I can see no planning reason to refuse it, really." But she said she hoped the applicant would try to address the neighbours' concerns. The committee voted unanimously to approve the scheme.
And finally, this one concerns buildings starting on the Handlebar Cafe. A groundbreaking event for a long-anticipated Winchester project was held on Thursday as the Chronicle went to press. Construction work on the Handlebar Cafe in Garnier Road is now underway, and it is scheduled to open in the summer. The ceremony was attended by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson and Mrs Anne Pearson, along with representatives of the main sponsors, including Utilita and Hampshire County Council. The project has been developed over the last 5 years by County Council-based charity SPUD. That's S-P-U-D. I'm afraid I don't know what that stands for. But it works with young people from across Winchester. Mark Drury, co-director at SPUD, said, "This is the culmination of a tremendous amount of hard work by all the team involved. The support from the local authorities, local businesses and individuals has been truly incredible, and without it we could not have reached this point. The cafe will be cycle-themed, open to everyone, and the building is set to resemble the shapes of two train carriages passing on the railway bridge. It will be crafted largely from timber and a model of sustainable design and offer bike maintenance, events and organised rides, and will be operated by local community interest company Bespoke Biking."
Thank you very much. Well then, that's all that we have for you from the extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. But before we go, I'd like to give you another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 711 998. And we'd like to thank all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and of course many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Richard.
Bye.
And Peter.
Bye.
And from me, Roz, until the next time, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. And once again, we'll say have an enjoyable next week, and we hope the weather stays at least a little bit warm like it is, and we've seen the end of snow. Thank you for listening. Goodbye for now.